둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday makes it a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones. Of course, you can grab us anywhere you get your podcasts from. That includes Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Please do give the series a rating, leave a review while you're at it as well. Some great guests have dropped by lately. St. Vincent, James Bay was here. Natasha Rothwell, she stars in How to Die Alone on Hulu. Soul Asylum's Dave Perner, Joe Scarborough from MSNBC's Morning Joe, H. John Benjamin, you know him as the title voices of Archer and Bob's Burgers, Keith Urban, Tim Heidecker, Les Claypool from Primus, David Yao from The Jesus Lizard, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Vernon Reed of Living Color. We're going to be talking about his contribution to the new and final album from MC5 called Heavy Lifting. Vernon's going to tell us about his longstanding relationship with MC5's Wayne Kramer, touching on their shared activism, music collaborations. He's going to reflect on how Kramer was fueled by a sense of injustice, which of course permeated his powerful guitar work, and shares his experience contributing to this final record, particularly on the song Can't Be Found. We'll also delve into the history of MC5, the musical dangers that band and Living Color have embraced, and of course rock music's arrival in a transformation due to black artists. Before we hear a little bit about Living Color's next album and his side project, Vernon's side project, the Freeform Funky Freaks, all that and more as we talk about MC5's Heavy Lifting, it's Kyle Meredith with Vernon Reed of Living Color.
Hi there, good morning.
I am excited. I've been such a big fan, follower for a very long time. I was thinking back, I know a lot of people's introduction to the band came with in the 80s with Cult of Personality. I think mine was just a couple years later with, do you remember, there was a compilation, it came out from Taco Bell called Do Something. It was a Do Something organization,
oh,
and you guys
wow.
had Leave It Alone on there.
Wow, Taco Bell compilations, good God.
That was in the 90s when that's something that you could do, you know, a Taco
yeah,
Bell compilation.
Yeah. They were all kind of tie-ins at that time, yep.
You guys had Leave It Alone on there, and a song that just to this day blows my mind, and I've been such a big fan and follower ever since that. But you're back, not with new music on that side of things, but with MC5, you've joined to do a guest spot on this, the final MC5 record, Heavy Lifting, and this powerful song on there can't be found. Well, I should start. What's your relationship to Wayne and the band?
I've known Wayne for a few year for a number of years. I mean, he was one of the veteran rockers that really accepted Living Color and sort of embraced that when we arrived. And we also are mutual friends with Tom Morello. And, you know, Tom Morello had this kind of guitar camp where he just had a wide range of instructors, including John Five and, you know, Betancourt. And Wayne and I we gave classes, and it was pretty fun. And over the years, you know, I had interesting just conversations with Wayne, because one of Wayne's concerns was criminal justice and the way, the conditions under which people are held, you know, and also talking about root causes, about violence, you know, and how people get channeled into violence, and he was really all about that. And you know, so we had many just kind of convos with him, you know, about the, you know, I think we both were fans of the criminologist Lonnie Athens, and talking about violentization, the process by which people become violent. So he was a thinker about these things, and, you know, he's a pioneering guitarist and a pioneering rock figure. But he's a lovely person to know.
I got fortunate to have him on this series this one time after his biography came out, and just to talk to him about that, of course, his time in jail and how that affected his life. And of course, he was thinking about that before he ever went to jail, of course, but really, especially afterwards, how that affected his life and his activism and his music and how you can hear that. I mean, I don't mean to sound corny when I say it, but you can hear that through the fury of his guitar, you know, all throughout his career,
absolutely.
You know, what he was doing. And just, I don't know, man, his praises haven't been sung enough. And I'm so happy that this record was able to be made before he passed away.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very sad that he's not here. I mean, a lot of his guitar was fueled by the rage at injustice, you know, and unfairness. He was a person that didn't like that, you know, and so it was an honor to be, you know, he made the request. You know, we've been talking about, he was like working on different projects, and then timings weren't always conducive. And then, you know, he mentioned this thing, and then Bob Ezrin, you know, was producing it, and I was like, man, let's do it, you know. And I'm happy to be a participant with so many other, you know, wonderful musicians. And I love the song, Can't Be Found.
So what was how did that one actually happen? Is that one that they send to you? Is that one you get to pick?
Yeah. I mean, no, they sent it to me. They said, it was like, this, I've got the, he was kind of like, I've got the song for you to play on. And I was like, okay. And then I heard it. Unfortunately, you know, when it was sent to me, it's like, okay, I hope this is not, and it was great, you know? And so it was a great fit.
So what happens then? I mean, you know, when you have an assignment like that, right? You got to understand the assignment. Like, they're looking for the Vernon Reid sound, but how much do you think of, you know, when Wayne was talking about the album before he passed, he was like, this is picking up where we left off at High Times. Like, do you consider that when you're thinking about what you're going to lay down?
Well, I mean, in a certain way, it's a balance between what the song is saying, you know, what the MC5 represent, filtered through the song that it is, and then what's my contribution going to be? And his thing was, man, do you. I mean, the conversation that I had with him and Bob was, man, no, man, do what you hear, do what you feel, you know? And went in a certain way. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to play retro, or I'm going to play like I'm going to play a kind of fuzz tone solo from the 70s, or, you know what I mean? It wasn't like that. It was kind of like, you know, man, do what you hear. And I just kind of I did a couple of passes. I think they took like one of the earliest passes. You know, I gave them a couple of passes, and I was really happy with the way they fitted in.
And that always the case. The early passes is what I mean. It seems like that's the story more than not. Like I did 10 takes. We took the first one. We took the second one. Like something to that beauty.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because it's like you could kind of go, well, I'm just going to send the take that I like. I let them deal with it. But, you know, with respect, you know, it's always good to have to give options. And you know, I kind of do some of this kind of high octave kind of overtone madness. And they kind of went for it as opposed to just straight, you know, kind of more normal guitar, you know. And I did a little bit of this kind of tapping thing, and they dug it. They dug what it did in the song, and I'm just happy with it that they dug that.
And we'll be right back right after this.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And Future Stronger You can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Vernon Reed. With whatever Wayne had in mind with this record, and whether or not, you know, you're like, you're picking up after High Times. I mean, sometimes it's a marketing line too, but it's a good marketing line. Don't get me wrong. But just showing how he was still able to tap into that. Like, I was thinking about the MC5, and I'd like to know, like, if you even remember, like, what you heard in the bands when you first heard them, because even considering how they sounded the way they did when, you know, in the late 60s, in this silo of Detroit, you know, we get the Stooges there too. And it's sort of mind blowing that that sound even existed at that little point in time, at least to me.
Well, it's sort of, I mean, in a way, they were an extension of the idea of music being ritualistic and experiential, the idea of music. I mean, there was a kind of extant feeling that music could be transformative. Like you could transform the evening or transform the audience, and this was extended over jazz of a certain period, rock of a certain period. The idea, I mean, in fact, Jimi Hendrix's first band was called The Experience. The idea that we're going to enter into this space you're not going to be the same. None of us are going to be the same by the final chord. And they were very much, part of this kind of cathartic, Dionysian type of thing, but with a political edge to it. But there was something that was, they were an outgrowth, and they pointed to something else, but they were an outgrowth of a thing that was really present in psychedelia. It was certainly present in the Miles Davis things that he was doing. It was clearly present in Hendrix. It was present with the Dead. It was present with Soul Sacrifice, Santana. You know, that this whole idea that we're going to change these circumstances, us together, you know, brothers and sisters, we're going to change the circumstances, and they believed it, and they believed it, and you hear it in the harangue of the guitars and the crash of the drums. You know, they did that thing, and as opposed to, there's a different kind of ritual that rock became. You know, the kind of, we're gonna land the plane safely. You know, there was no guarantee. They offered no guarantees of that. And that's what made them so immediate and so visceral.
I like the way you put that, because it actually did feel dangerous. And that can be a cliche sometimes when we talk about, you know, but because sometimes you want it to feel dangerous, but, you know, you want it, so you're forcing it. But it felt dangerous. It felt like, you know, I called some bands, I didn't make up the phrase, but the secret, you know, they were a secret handshake for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you... if you found somebody else that knew the MC5, like you found someone that you could relate to, you know, in that secret handshake sort of way. But that's it. I mean, that danger that they had, that's not, you know, a lot of folks were wearing the politics on their sleeve around that time too. And they certainly did that, but the way they did it, it just felt like it was something even more, you know, than the typical, you know, late 60s hippie fair or whatever it was.
Well, also, I mean, the age of the audience of the kind of time that it was, the fact that there was a mainstream to react against, you know, that was also a part of the collapsing of the bifurcation of mainstream with underground. You know, that's a part of the thing that's happened, you know, it's a process over time. You know, and, I mean, it started out with the singer maybe would tear her shirt off and people in the audience would tear their shirts off. And then it became the dude tears his shirt off and the audience is staring at the guy tearing his shirt off, you know? You're like, man, this shirt is expensive. I'm wearing. I'm not tearing my shirt off, you know. And then, and it goes on from there. You know, if you're gonna, you know, there was a time if the singer rolled around in broken glass, and you know, half the audience would do it too. And that, you know, it's just like people started going, "Geez, I got to go to work on Monday morning. How am I going to explain the scars?" You know?
Is that a rock show? That's a, I mean, you all picked up that mantle. I mean, whether or not it was directly passed to you, whatever, but Living Color, I mean, everything that we're talking about here, I think I could say the same thing about what you all were doing once you took over. And in fact, you know, we talk about that danger even in just the music. You know, I was listening to the Freeform Funky Freaks that, you know, that you just put out.
All improvised. Yeah.
Because talk about, you know, the essence of danger. I love that, listening to people who are really good at that style, who can pull it off, because when you've got the style of, I'm guessing that's improv, you know, what you guys are doing, and the art of not overthinking it. I mean, it's so, everything could just dissolve. It could break right then. And yet somehow you all survive to the end of it.
Well, you know? It's weird. I'm in a way, I mean, it's very strange when I think about it from my perspective. You know, I love pop music. You know what I mean? I love pop music. And I couldn't tell you why I suddenly added the avant-garde to my aesthetic. You know, like I liked Motown and liked, you know, I liked the Beatles. You know what I mean? And then suddenly, and maybe it was hearing Family Affair, maybe it was hearing Coltrane, my favorite things. Like I had these audio experiences, hearing Machine Gun, you know, hearing, you know, Broadway Blues, Ornette Coleman, you know, like it's sort of, you know, seeing Sun Ra, and that somehow I gradually, my hearing and what attracted me in music became weirdly wider and included, you know, because, you know, Hendrix, you know, he dissolved the boundary between melody and noise, you know, and he did it, you know, just by turning the volume of his guitar up and turning it down, you know, and things like that. So, you know, one part of me, you know, I love like songcraft. I mean, I think Hal David is like one of the greatest lyricists of all time, you know, but then at the same time, I love Albert Isla and the edges and the people that went out to the edge and some that didn't quite return, you know, and there's something about that. And the tension between those two things are part of what animates me.
I think I had that similar story. My entry into that world was Miles at the Fillmore. I don't remember if it was East or West, but
yeah, right. Yeah.
Cause those were like, that was the Freeform. That was cut up tapes on top of it, you know, and that,
oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. That led to, I mean, that led to Sonic
Bill
Youth.
Graham,
and everything.
I mean, because you know, the thing is Bill Graham as an impresario, right. As a presenter of the experience, he had a genius for exposing people to things that they may not understand. Or they may not initially like, you know, like he had the, you know, Miles Davis and the Byrds on the same bill, you know? I mean, that's like, I mean, he shifted a whole generation's hearing in that way and taking that risk and just having the faith, oh, they'll get it, they'll be fine. And, you know, that I think about Hilly Crystal, you know, the bills at CBGB's, you know. Those people that put on a show and are able to put together all of the elements. It's kind of like, almost like DJs, but with living people, you know, mixing it and actually allowing for the collisions to happen. You know, the idea of American music is not created simply by agreement. It is forged out of people that shouldn't have been across the tracks, that went across the tracks. You know, like James Brown had said, long-haired hippies and the Afro-Blacks all get together, cross the tracks, and they party.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Vernon Reed.
You were talking about landing the plane safely a minute ago with Brock. I mean, like, it wasn't written yet, you know, to quote Joe Strummer. You know,
the future is unwritten is a great quote. Absolutely. You know, that's the thing. Like, being in our silos, our kind of segregated silos of safety, you know, our lives are actually the poor for it. Like, I'll give you a quick culinary example. The first time I had a falafel, I had never tasted chickpeas before, fried chickpeas. I damn near spit it out. I didn't dig it. It was, so the mystery to me is what made me go, after my first kind of shocking experience, what made me go to Mamoun's and order that second falafel? Yeah.
And what do you think that was? Just to spell it out here.
I guess my palate was assaulted, and then my taste was altered, and then I became intrigued to just check. Was that as bad as I thought? And then I had my second falafel and I fell in love with it.
I do want to quickly ask you about the Land of Living Color too. I know you guys are touring. It's been, 7 years or so since that last record. But this, I don't know how you look at it. Is this the 40th anniversary year?
This is, yeah. 1984. We've been doing off and on. We've been doing like a year with the band Extreme as a special guest, touring with them. Doing some headlining shows. We're about to go to Canada, the Pacific Northwest, some dates in the Midwest in September. We started initial recordings for a new record, and that's going to continue the recording process with that. And it's been fun. I mean, we've entered into a realm with each other of it's too easy to say comfort, but as a group, we're willing to get out of the way of the thing we collectively create. And that thing still means something to each of us. And I'm really grateful for that, because I think there are a lot of bands, they're kind of done with each other. They're no longer fans of each other. It's a job that they do. And they're doing nobody any favors, and you know, people see it, right? And you know, gigs can be a kind of, because rock and roll music is not at the center of everything as it was, and you know, the younger bands and younger audiences are having their experiences with each other. I'm always gratified when I see younger people in the audience, and I'm always gratified when particularly myself, when I'm not in the way, you know, of the thing, and we connect what it is that we're saying. Because what we're talking about is freedom for everyone. That's what we've always been talking about. It's like, you know, four black guys playing rock. Well, you know, I never accepted the premise that rock was anything other than black music, you know, that expanded out to everyone. So I was not making a, It never, you know, because for me, I have an alternate history of rock and roll, right? Like, the Isley Brothers are recognized as the greatest American rock and roll band in my head, because, you know, no band has the longevity. Ernie Isley would have gotten his guitar magazine covers in the 70s, you know what I mean? War would be recognized after Eric Burdon. War would be recognized as a great alternative rock and roll band. They are nothing else but an alternative rock band that's also funky, that brings together Latin and black idioms. You know, Funkadelic would be recognized as one of the great, you know, post psychedelic. So in my head, these things, Edwin Byrd's song Supernatural, which was produced by Eddie Kramer, which introduced Ronnie Drayton, who were doing a tribute to him at Sony Music Hall in New York on August 27th with a bunch of other artists like 24/7 Spies. All of these things for me, and it includes Led Zeppelin and everything else, but there's a way that that other thing has been shut out, like, you know what I mean? Where it's been closed off. A band like Automatic Man doesn't get any respect. You know, Fishbone, like, restarted the ska punk as a thing. There's no doubt without Fishbone. You know, like, Jane's Addiction had their first, like, one of their first rehearsals in, like, Norwood Fisher's house, right? So there's a whole history that connects all that. The Bad Brains are given their due, you know what I mean? Influenced as much by fusion as they're influenced by punk. So that's the ground. That's the basis for where my head is in terms of, it is about freedom for all.
I would read that book in a heartbeat, watch that documentary in a heartbeat. All those bands, and I just seen Fishbone in the last year. We just had War over here at WFPK, where I'm also based. We play Funkadelic, and of course we play tons of Living Color as well. So I'm so happy that you guys are still doing what you do.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to hear the new record. In the meantime, of course, congrats again on being part of this this final MC5 record with Heavy
it's
Lifting.
It's a great honor. It's a great honor. And you know, Wayne Kramer was he was a mensch. He was all the things. You know, he stood for what he believed. I think he helped a lot of people, you know, and he helped people that other people, you know, wrote off, you know. And so I have love and respect, and especially, you know, shout out to Margaret, you know, who's dealing with organizing all of this and in the midst of dealing with her grief. You know? So it's an honor for real.
But Vernon, it's such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Not a problem. We should do it again sometime.
My thanks to Vernon Reed. MC5's final album is called Heavy Lifting. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, I do hope you hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can get all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating, leave a review while you're here. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Van Morrison, Beck, Jason Isbell, Soundgarden, Hooverphonic, The Damned, Ramones, Catherine Wheel, Father John Misty, Rhoda Dakar, Over the Rhine, Bill Withers, the Allman Brothers Band, Common Saints, Sneaker Pimps, Sex Pistols, The Killers, and my interview with Colin Newman from the band Wire. Just an example of what you can hear when you tune in weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I'm pressing on all these things and nothing seems to be obeying my, which is typical technology.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.